Actually, verse 10 through 12 includes a reminder of some verses that we've already studied and talked about. It says, remove not the ancient landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. For the Redeemer is strong, their Redeemer is strong. He will plead their cause against thee. Apply thy heart unto instruction, and thine ears to the words of knowledge. As we stated back in, actually, in chapter 22, 28, some very similar to this, in fact, almost word for word, remove not the ancient landmarks. It was in those days, particularly when there was a widower or a fatherless son that inherited a piece of property, that people would take advantage of that by going out there and removing their stone at night and moving it to a different location and taking advantage of really stealing their property, because there were no recordings in the courthouse, surveys and stuff like that done.
Is it the same thing that Jesus condemned the Pharisees at his time?
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to take care of widows and orphans, and they're stealing their stuff.
Stealing stuff.
Under concealment of law, they were doing
it. Yeah. One of them was that they were supposed to take care of them, and they contributed so much money to a certain area that relieved them of that responsibility, Torah or something like that. And so it was just a way of getting around of the obligation and what God wanted them to do. But you got to remember here, God, it says their Redeemer, God is their defender. He's the one who's going to take care of them. And you and I don't stand a chance against God Almighty. Or anyone stands a chance against God Almighty. To supply thy heart unto instruction, we know that the Hebrew meaning for that in those days was corrections, when God corrects them. And thine ears to the words of knowledge and to the facts that exist out there. Any kind of underhanded activity, whether you're trying to deceive one out of property or monies or whatever, by using unfair methods, God condemns. God condemns. And particularly those who are helpless. Anybody got any questions about those verses? 10 through 12. Won't you listen to these verses 13 and 14? Withhold not correction from the child. If thou beat him with a rod, he will not die. Thou shalt beat him with a rod, as it says in verse 14, and shall deliver his soul from Sheol, from Hades. That is corporal punishment. We can't order it down. It doesn't mean abusive punishment. It doesn't mean hurting them to the point of life. But it does mean punishing them with a rod. Painful punishment. Go ahead.
This new version, the New Century version, it makes things plainer. For stupid people like me, don't fail to punish your children. If you spank them, they won't die. If you spank them, you'll save them from death. You know, beaten with a rod sounds pretty harsh. You
know? Well, it's a switch.
It probably meant a switch.
A switch.
When you say a rod, it sounds
I know what it sounds like. But most of them do say rod. But they're switch. And if you were anywhere like me and my brothers, we tested those switches out before we brought them into the house to see how much pain you could get out of them, or how little pain. And found out if you left the leaves on them, it was less painful than it was if you shut the leaves off of them.
Did you have to go out and let both of you get in trouble? One of you had to go out and get the switch for the other one?
Sometimes we had to do that.
Then you come back with a tree trunk.
But you know, we grew up knowing our wrongdoing had consequences. Kids, today grow up, they don't have no more consequences. And so then we don't need to be surprised when they're disrespectful to the elders. I mean, like, for example, when we went on a bus or a train and you saw an elder person come in, you got up and gave them the seat. Now they, people just, I mean, I've seen older people just barely being able to stand, and young people are sitting there and not even move.
Something similar to that, I think it was on TV, I guess it had to be the way I saw it, where this pregnant girl came in on the bus, and these young people sitting right there. And so she finally said, look, and finally made the guy feel so bad that he got up and gave her the seat, and then the elder lady was standing beside her here, so she got up and gave it to the elder lady, trying to teach him a lesson.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody got any thoughts about it? We've got to take care of our children. Corporal punishment, by the way, is probably one of the greatest faults that we've had in our nations today, including the United States, where our laws do not mean punishment like they used to. You know, actually, if you get put in jail, you've got a better home, a better food, and a better life in jail than you did if you were out on the streets. For sure. So you gain by doing that. One of the other versions says, do not hesitate to discipline a youth. Though you beat him with a stick, he will not die. Indeed, you should beat him with a stick and save his life from Sheol. Just another version of that same thing. Verses 15 to 16. My son, if thy heart be wise, my heart will be glad, even mine. Yea, my heart will rejoice when thy lips speak right things. It just shows you how much of a parent can have joy in their children when a child is raised right in God, and compared to the grief that we can have when they're not raised right and they cause us pain. And we all know that. We have children and we know when they do good, we're proud of them. And when they apply to people, when they say the right things, they get up and give seats like that. A little fellow comes in around here and hugs everybody in this class. Mm-hmm. How could you not be proud of that child?
I think also, Jerry, that it applies to the relationship between parents and children when the parents grow older.
Mm-hmm.
If they have been taught properly, they will respect their parents until the day that they pass.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, I look at my kids, they know they're certain. I don't know what they do when they live their own lives, but when they come to my house, they know there are certain things that are not happening at my house. And they would bend over backwards to help me in any situation. And then I see parents whose children abuse them, forget about them. And to me, this is the product of our society today.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the major things is we're just not disciplined people. We were raised without discipline, with no consequences. Of course, you had two granddaughters that went here, and everybody knew how much they loved you, because they hung around you every time they got in here. Number 17 and 18. Let not thy heart envy sinners, but be thou in the fear of Jehovah all day long. For surely there is a reward, and thy hope shall not be cut off. This expression or this thought here has been expressed in previous verses. Never envy anybody, particularly sinners. Although sin has an attraction, there's a reward, a temporary reward when you enter into sin. So it has an attraction. But our hope, of course, is in heaven, which is a reality. It's not something that we long for here on earth. You know, Jesus said, in my Father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, in John 14:2. This being true, then, why should any Christian envy somebody here on earth? We got a promise of a mansion.
Jerry, I have a question about verse 17, and it's not that I don't understand the word sinners, but could the word sinners be unfaithful? Because we're all of sinners, and when I read this verse, I'm thinking of those that are not following God's command. For example, and I'm not throwing stones, like fellowship and joining together, because there are people that you will see or work with that seem like they have it all together, and they're not. I'm going to put it in air quotes, sinning, as I would say, oh, they're out there doing something really wrong, but they're just not walking faithful, but their life looks good, or they look like they're comfortable, or they're successful. Because we all are sinners. Could that word sinners be unfaithful?
Because what's the difference between wrong and really wrong?
Nothing. It's still wrong.
It's wrong. So when they profit from that, when they use that as an attraction to show others how well they're doing, then of course that's trying to get you to want within God, and that's trying to create the image within you. But there are people out there who prosper, but even those that prosper, you shouldn't envy them. You should, as long as they're getting the godly ways, and you will strive to do yours, we gain the same way, but not envy what they accomplished and we haven't accomplished. If you compare yourself to any other person, this is a truism. There are only two things can happen. You either think you're better than they are, or you think you're less than they are. Neither one of them are right. So never compare what you have, what they got, or what they're doing.
I had a girlfriend, and she always wanted to win the lottery. She always wanted to get rich. And I told her one day, I said, you are 10 times richer than your mom and dad ever were. And you much more richer than your grandparents ever were. So you got a house, you got food, you got clothes, you got a car to drive, you got enough money to pay your bills. I said, how much richer do you want to get?
We don't like to compare that way.
We need to count our blessings that we have, and don't worry about the rest of it.
Yep.
Gary.
Yeah.
I just want to add a little bit to what you were saying, Jerry. I like the way you put that. What's the difference between wrong and really wrong? There's so many people that they don't go to church, but they consider themselves as good people because they don't steal, they don't rob, they help anybody that they think is a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I'm a good person. And yet still, you don't serve God. You know, and what I think this scripture is referring to is people that, when they say sinners, they mean people that do not serve God. They don't respect God. They may not go out and kill people and be cussing every day and getting drunk and all that, but they still have no desire to serve God. They have no desire to live a godly life. Yet still they think they're good people. You know, and it's sad to say, but there's a lot of people in the world that's like that today, you know. And even some that go to church, they do go to church, but that's all they do, is go to church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't participate in anything that the church is involved in. They don't try to bring others to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
They just basically come, warm a seat, they'll be there every Sunday when the doors open, they'll put money in the place. They feel like they're doing their part. Just like we said one time, like a checklist.
Yeah.
So I checked my checklist off. I came, I was here, and I did this,
I donated and I left.
Yeah.
What more can you ask of me?
But that's, there's more to it than that, you know, but that's the way people look at it. So, and looking at it, similar as Christ said, the men are going to say what they did, and Christ said, I don't know you. You know, but your heart was not there.
Okay, verses 19 through 21. Hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thy heart in the way. Be not among winebibbers, among gluttonous eaters of flesh. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. There's some very explicit warnings of some very bad habits. He's asking you to listen to it and be wise. Give God's wisdom for guidance. And it says wine, my book says wine bibbers, yours may say something else. But we're talking about not only wine, we're talking about alcohol, we're talking about overindulgence.
Mine says do not join those who drink too much wine.
Mm-hmm. Also, it says gluttonous.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to ever mention that. We want to knock down that drunken guy. But we want to talk about it, but we don't want to talk about eating too much. This basically is a condemnation of drinking alcohol, alcoholic beverages, but it's also a condemnation of eating too much of anything. It's often pointed out that, what's the old saying? One social drink is one drink drunk, but never mentioned one nice big slice of apple pie a la mode is one apple pie gluttonous.
One apple pie, right. All things in moderation.
All things. That's what God gave us the brains for. Use your brains. Well, he says in the last verse, and drowsiness will clothe the man with rags. Of course, we all know that you can drink to the point that you're out of it. You're gone. And of course, when you're out of it, you can't work either. If you can't work, you're not going to have to be able to buy clothes, so you're going to be end up being in rags. It's a good, fast way to go to poverty. And I know we probably all experienced some of that somewhere with the people we knew and were in our own family. And if we didn't learn a lesson by that, then we never will learn a lesson. Never will. Anybody got more thoughts or comments on those two? Gluttonous and drunkenness. 22-23. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not, yea, wisdom and instruction and an understanding. Again, same thing it says back in verse 15. You get, as Judy was pointing out, if you're raised by good parents, then you respect them to the end. Even if you're not raised by the perfect parent, you still respect them when they get old. By the truth, if you can't go by the truth, then I think that could be phrased another way. You gotta work hard for the truth. You gotta put in some effort for the truth. You got to do whatever is necessary to get the truth. If you have the truth, then of course you can't sell it either. It's something that is a byproduct of your getting out and earning the truth. In other words, if you know the truth, don't waste it. Don't waste it. Yea, wisdom, God's wisdom, instruction, that's God's correction. And understanding, as we know, the Hebrew term back in those days was common sense. That's what understanding meant, common sense. God's common sense. Anybody got any thoughts on that? 24:25. The father of righteousness, the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise son shall have joy. Go back to verse 12. It's basically the same concept there. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child will have joy in him. Let thy father and thy mother be glad, and let her that bear thee rejoice. He had mentioned both parents, father and wife, mother. Basically saying, make your parents proud of you. Do those things that would make your parents proud of you. God would be proud of you. Okay, anybody got any thoughts? These are good common sense things that we should be absorbing and having our mindset up to now. 26:28, my son, give me thy heart. Let thine eyes delight in my ways. For a harlot is a deep ditch, and a foreign woman is a narrow pit. Yea, she lieth in wait as a robber, and increaseth the treacherous among men. If you recall, about the first 7 chapters of the Proverbs dealt with this situation. And it lists 2 of them here that can get you in deep trouble. One being the harlot, the other being a foreign woman. I think we determined back how we were talking about the 2 women. A foreign woman was a prostitute, someone from came from another place and came into town, was a prostitute, and the harlot was an adulterer, one who, when her husband was out of town, she invited the men to come into her house. Both of them, either one, give you the same problem. Increase the treacherous among men. And where we use women here, you can put a man there. In both places, you can put a man there. So he's not just talking about women. The harlot, remember, that's the one that the adulterer causes her victim to be faithless to God, to his parents, to his wife, to his family, and to himself. So there's a multitude of problems with the adulterer. Adulteress, adulterer. Any comments? Pretty easy. We're going over this stuff. Then we're going to be picking back up for these last verses in this chapter. This will hit hard for those who have had to suffer through some of this as a wife or a spouse or kinfolk or whatever. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath complaining? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness in his eyes? They that tarry long after wine, they that seek out mixed wine. So that you'll understand about the wine, the mixed wine. In those days, a mixed wine was a diluted wine by water to make it less strong, less powerful. And a mixed wine was some ingredients you could add to it to make it more powerful, such as driving more alcohol itself out of it, in it. I've probably seen all that in my daytime. Not personally, but seen it in my daytime. I got another verse that says, who groans? Who cries? Woe is me! Who gets into quarrels? Who has complaints? Who suffers needless wounds? Whose eyes are bloodshot? Shot. Those who linger over wine, those who drain the mixing bowl. Any thoughts or comments on that? Just another warning. put back in your memory bank. And this is how someone who's addicted or who has this affliction says, look not thou upon the wine when it's red, when it sparkleth in the cup, when it goeth down smoothly, and at last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. It looks so tempting. So tempting. So tempting. I remember one time I was over doing some work over at Central Virginia State University, and was doing something on one of the campuses, and they had a crew come in to cut the grass. And this one guy at the end of cutting the grass, he went over to his truck and went around. He took a little sip out of a bottle and he hid the bottle. He hid the bottle so he could come back the next day or whatever. But anyway, it wasn't too long. Somebody came along and had the bottle. And I saw him steal a man. It was only his bottle, but I guess it was wine. But found that way he hid it and took that thing and stuck it in his pocket and went home down the street. So he may have been watching and saw the same thing I saw. We laugh at that, but it's a problem, you know, when it interferes with your life, when it interferes with your family, when it interferes with your worship to God or your service to God, it's a problem. It's a problem. Okay. Some more descriptions of some of the problems they have. Verse 33 to 35, thine eyes shall behold strange things when you have too much alcohol, and thy heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, they shall be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, they shall say, and I was not hurt. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When I was awake, I shall seek it yet again. Terrible descriptions of the state of a man when he has absolutely no, seems to have no control over the predicament he got himself in.
Jerry, I think that describes typically an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
It just describes everything they go through.
Mm-hmm.
And they really literally live for their next drink.
And they'll do anything for that next drink.
And it's a sad thing to see.
It's a drug. Yeah.
And another thing about situations of people that find themselves in that situation, a lot of times they feel like they do that, they take a drink to get away from their troubles. But they never, you know, you never get away from it. You know, you constantly, it's like a catch-22 situation. You're always doing it thinking you're going to forget about everything that you know, what's bothering you. But that doesn't solve the problem. And you continue to drinking and trying to get it off your mind, and all you're doing is drinking more and more. And you're trying to get it off your mind more and more, because the more you drink, the more you're going to think of it.
I read in here somewhere that there's nowhere in the Bible where they said that moderate drinking was approvable. Mm-hmm. Again, stress the fact that the dangers of what alcohol is. But then I tried to justify in my mind that why did they have wine at the weddings? You know, mm-hmm. Particularly in Jesus' turn.
Back in Proverbs 31, they actually tell you to get beer. In other words, the wine or alcohol is not the issue. It's the over It's a drunkenness issue.
It is. It's excess.
Because if it wasn't, if alcohol in and of itself was evil, you know, no good, then why do you say over here, it's a good beer to people who are dying and wine to those who are sad. Let them drink and forget their need and remember their misery no more. Spoke the other.
It's hard, and I would never stand up here and justify drinking the strong alcohol, particularly if it was drunk into excess. But I could not, in good conscience, put something in the Bible that's not in there, or try to come up with a conclusion that's impossible to come to. I think the wine that Jesus made was the best wine they ever had. And whether or not it came 3% alcohol or 2% of, well, I don't know. That doesn't matter. But I know he did it, and I know they were all pleased from it and said it tasted better than the first wine, much better than the first wine they had. And I'll let you draw your own conclusion. That's why you're in a class to get wisdom. You do your own thinking on that.
And they didn't really have the technology to keep things from ferment.
If
you kept something to drink later.
You had to. It was no good if you couldn't ferment it back in those days. Yes.
You make a good point. It's all about self-control in everything.
Yes.
That's what the Lord is about. If we let anything be God above Him, we're doing wrong. It could be alcohol. It can be any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
But self-control, we're supposed to have.
Honey, as sweet as it is to taste, you sit down and you start drinking honey in the excess, and you're going to get sick.
Yeah.
You're going to get sick. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's weird. That makes sure we remember. Also, too, that the purpose of the wine in those days was for to kill bacteria that was in your body, mm-hmm. in your stomach, because they didn't have filtration system like we have. So, drinking wine was supposed to, a little wine was supposed to help clean your body and, you know, kill off bacteria. But just like in today's society and everything else, people go to the extreme with stuff, you know, and then you get people that, oh, this tastes good, and they keep on drinking.
Yeah.
Before you know it, you're too much and then you can't handle it, you know, or anybody, you know, can't handle it, or they drink it when they're not supposed to, or eat something when they're not supposed to. And we get carried away with it.
I just don't want to add anything to God's word that's not in there. I don't, certainly would not to take anything away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just.
I was going to say, wine was actually used for medicinal purposes a lot. For example, digesting things. Alcohol is in cough syrup. It's
90% of your drugs has got alcohol.
And people get high off of it because they abuse it, okay? So it's you look at certain European countries like France, they serve wine with certain meals because it helps with the digestion of this food. Germany is the same way. Certain foods, for example, people drink a glass of wine or a glass of beer with it because it helps to digest the food. But children are even taught from little on, you don't abuse this. It's not there to get drunk. It's there to aid the body to do what it needs to do. But when you use it just to be using it, that's where the danger comes in.
Paul told Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. But again, I'm not up here preaching and don't want anyone to take that.
But, you know, Jerry, at the same time, if I know that somebody is in my presence, or I would, somebody would be in my presence that would have problems with this, you shouldn't partake of
absolutely.
It at all.
Absolutely.
And that's him.
Absolutely.
Because I got a guy that claims to be a black Hebrew Israelite, and when we got pork around, I just don't eat. You know, I'd rather him, you know.
Yeah. Well, like Paul said, all things are permissible to me, but is it prudent to do it in front of somebody that has a problem
Absolutely.
With it, you know?
Okay, we have concluded chapter 23, and we're facing chapter 24. We got a few minutes, so I'm going to get started in this. Otherwise, we may not be through in this year in Proverbs. We've got to keep going. Number 1 and 2, these verses go together. Be thou, and you'll notice we've talked about this before. Be not thou envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their heart studieth oppression, and their lips talk of mischief. 23:17, basically the same thing. Envy is not merely just a destructive of the personality of the envious, but to drive the motive of many kinds for us to do other kinds of foolishness and wickedness. There's a strange attractiveness about things that are evil, and that's why people commit sins. Young people, sometimes older people, are fascinated by the glamour and aura of success and power that someone has and wish they had it, and those people might be evil.
Jerry, my mother used to have to say, be mindful of your friends, because you will be known by the company you keep.
If you remember, we studied in Proverbs many verses of many Proverbs on choosing your friends wisely. Choose your friends wisely. Through wisdom is the house builded, and by understanding it is established, and by knowledge are the chambers filled with all precious and pleasant riches. And go back in, we'll substitute some words to wisdom. We're talking about God's wisdom here. House builded, that's your own personality, your heart, by understanding. Understanding is when you're disciplined by God and you take those corrections in the way that you should and change your lifestyle accordingly. And it becomes established in you, and all the knowledge of your chambers are filled up, and they are as precious as any metal that's out there. To have that within your being. So we started off in Proverbs just telling you, explaining how precious wisdom was, more precious than any stone or gold you can find out there. And if you come filled with that, you'll come up with God's common sense. Unimaginable riches, God's common sense. Comment? Number 5 and 6, a wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth might, for by wise guidance thou shalt make thy war, and in the multitude of counsels there is safety. We had Proverbs before this that told us that it's better to be wise than just be strong. A wise man will build a weapon the superior to what a strong man has, and that beat him every time. Mm-hmm. It's like a guy who came up with a Gatling gun. Mm-hmm. You know, back when the Gatling gun came out, the war was almost over with. Whoever had the Gatling gun had the gun. They had the right weapon. That was done by people with wisdom. Wise Gavinus, as shall make war, we're always supposed to seek counsel on any major decision that we want or in the process of making, particularly if it affects other members of your family. You want to get counseling on that. You don't want that whole burden of that decision to be upon you. If you can get, and we're talking about godly wisdom, godly counsel with other people, because they may have come across that already, may have suffered through it already, may have answers for you that you hadn't thought about yet. Comment? I'm going to take this. Well, we got a couple more. Wisdom is too high for a fool. He openeth not his mouth at the gate. A fool is one who won't accept or doesn't care about wisdom. He doesn't care about understanding, particularly God's understanding. And when it comes time for him to speak and to gain. This is what reflects back to what they used to do in those days. They would, the wise people, the rulers, or whoever they were, the city rulers, they would come there and would speak the mind about what's going to happen in the city and what the rules and laws were. Well, a fool would never attempt to stand up and talk amongst them. In other words, he would keep his he'd keep his mouth shut. And we have a proverb on that. Even a fool is deemed wise until he opens his mouth and lets everybody know he's not wise. A fool would not dare speak in the presence of wise men. Wisdom and fool are two incomparables. Incomparable. Number 8 and 9. He that dwelleth to do evil, men shall call him a mischief maker. The thought of foolishness is sin, and a scoffer is an abomination to men. We rephrase that. He that plots to do evil, men will call him bad because he causes bad things to happen. The thought of foolishness is a sin. He started off on the wrong ground by just even thinking about doing something to sin. And a scoffer is an abomination to men. God, a scoffer is also, we read and we studied, is an abomination to God. That's one of those people that God has been listed. It was many of them, but that's one of them, where God specifically mentions that he's an abomination to him. And you do not want your list, name on that list of things guilty of abomination to God. All right, we're going to call it. That's it right there. We're going to start right there. I'm going to pick it up on number 10 next time. Okay.